2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper. Kyle Glazer here. Another Baseball America podcast. A fun one today. We are going to dive into Kyle's in-depth study that really kind of asks a very simple question, but a very complex one with a lot to kind of discuss, analyze, and kind of see what we've learned from it. The simple question is, how many big leaguers, how many good big leaguers, how many all-stars are in a farm system? And we're not talking about looking at this from the standpoint of let's take a farm system and look at it, but let's look at every farm system. Let's look at every organization over the span of multiple decades and see what trends, what we learn from that. And this is going to be, you know, there's a lot to digest in this. If you have not checked it all out, baseballamerica.com, it's all up there now. There's a lot to enjoy with this. But Kyle, to kind of just jump into this, to kind of start it off with this, you dove into the numbers, you dove into the data, you look at it. What jumped out to you most out of this? Now that you've done all the work and you've kind of analyzed it and you talked to people and all, what jumps out to you as far as what you learned by looking at how many big leaguers, how many, you know, future stars there are in a farm system?
Yeah, I think what surprised me most was across the board, the numbers were higher than I expected them to be. How many future major leaguers does a team have in its system in a given year? How many future regulars? How many future all-stars? What inspired me to do this, and I think for those of you who have been reading Baseball America for the last few years since I joined the staff, every February I try and tackle kind of a big project. I did one about the myth of the fourth outfielder floor, how even the guys you think of as fourth outfielders actually all hit 280 in the minors. You know, I did one where I looked at how many all-stars are actually in the minors at a given time in a given year. And that number turned out to be higher than I expected as well. And this was the latest project in that ilk. And I had looked back, you know, at some of the farm systems from a few years ago to try and get a feel for, okay, how many guys in here turned into major leaguers or regulars or all-stars, and more kind of in informal glances, I was finding, okay, there's about 20 guys in this system who turned out to be major leaguers, you know, maybe 7 or 8 of them become regulars, and, you know, maybe 3 or 4 of them become all-stars if it's a really good system. But those were more informal glances. Those were more just kind of eye test, looking through some old systems. I wanted to do something a little more comprehensive. And so I was able to dive into 15 years worth of farm system data with a huge assist from Dan Hirsch, his former website, thebaseballgauge.com. He was kind enough to share his data with us so we could really dive into it. And we
thank you, Dan.
Yes, hugely. Without him, this project would not have been possible. You know, and from we looked at starting in 1998, because that was the first year there were 30 teams in the majors, and we went through 2012, because a lot of the prospects who were still in the minors in 2013, you know, they're still in the minors through 2016, made their debut in 2017-18. They haven't had time to become all-stars or regulars yet. So we stopped it at 2012. That's 15 seasons. Looked at every team's farm system, how many future major leaguers were in each farm system, how many future regulars, how many future all-stars. And what surprised me was just, again, how large the numbers were. We found that in a farm system in a given year, there's an average of 35 players who will reach the major leagues in one team's farm system. Now, for a lot of those guys, they make it for, you know, a couple games, a brief call-up, and they never see the majors again. But even 35 players on average in a farm system reaching the majors struck me as very high. I thought that number was going to be more 20 to 25. And then on top of that, the number of regulars on average was 11, again, higher than I expected. And what really jumped out to me was the number of future all-stars in an average farm system, not a great one, not an all-time one, an average one was 3 to 4. And even the worst ones, the least productive systems in terms of producing future all-stars, averaged 2 all-stars in their farm system every year over the course of a 15-year period. Now, there were plenty of years where those teams had 0 or 1, but they also had years where they had 5 or 6. So just the fact that pretty much even the worst farm systems have on average, 2 future all-stars, 7 future regulars, and 27 future big leaguers. And the average ones are, you know, 35 future big leaguers, 11 future regulars, 3 to 4 all-stars. It just jumped out to me. And I think it tells you how many quality prospects there are in the minors at a given time.
The other thing that stands out with that is, you know, that how many really does stand out. And the other thing, though, is the gulf between a good farm system and a bad system. Even the bad ones have more guys than maybe you would have thought going in. But there's a very distinct difference between a good farm system and a bad one, isn't there?
There is. And really where you see that bear out for the most part is in the number of regulars and all-stars. But, you know, it's tough for me to say the gap might be smaller or larger than you thought, because I don't know what people thought.
Right.
But when you looked at it, the average, you know, so our top-end team, in terms of the most major leaguers they had in their farm system each year on average, was 42. And the lowest team was 28. So even your typical number 30 farm system has almost 30 future major leaguers in it. So that 42 to 28 spread, I mean, that's a lot of major leaguers. That's, you know, 14 guys. But
the regulars is what stands out to me more.
Yeah, and so that, and that's where the regulars, so the top end team in terms of the most regulars produced on average was the Braves at 14 during the sample. Diamondbacks and Twins were just behind them. If you round up, they're at 14 as well. Where the low-end teams, the Orioles, came in just under 7. So that's where the biggest difference is the best team, the best, most productive farm systems literally have double the amount of future regulars as the worst ones.
And the other thing that just kind of stands out with it to me is you look at this, like it's not surprising to me. That's where you see kind of the more, you know, there's gulfs in both of them. But I do kind of look at it and say, like, I don't care how bad of a system you have. At some point during the season, you're probably going to bring up some guys because, you know, you need that backup to fill a couple of games, or that reliever who's up because you've taxed the bullpen this week, things like that. You can almost, how many major leaguers you have is a certain amount, a choice, and also kind of a function of roster churn, whether you're good or you're bad. But when you talk about guys, you know, they're using the criteria you used, you don't get to 1,500 plate appearances without having something that you provide of value to an MLB team. And that to me is those numbers that are the ones that to me are really kind of more instructive from that standpoint, that whether it's pitcher or hitter, position player, you are talking about there, you had to have done something, you know, to earn some staying power there.
Yeah, there's no question. I think what jumped out to me in this too, in terms of the number of regulars, and we measured that by roughly the equivalent of 3 full seasons in the majors. That's 1,500 at-bats, 450 innings pitched, or 150 appearances. What really stood out to me was 20 of the 30 teams, so 2/3 of all teams during this span, had at least 10 future regulars in their farm system in a given year. That was another number that surprised me. So I think I come out of this almost with the impression of when we see our organization talent rankings and teams get mad about, oh, we're the number 25 system. Oh, we're the number 30 system. Oh, we're the number 20 system. There are still 7 to 10 future regulars in that system. There are still 2 to 3 future all-stars in that system. So I think what this really showed me was, and you know this abstractly, but I think seeing the numbers really drove it home for me. Every team has guys in their system who will do something in the major leagues. No system is ever truly empty. And I think just that, seeing that 2/3 of all teams had at least 10 future regulars in their system over the course of this 15-year sample, that jumped out to me as well.
When you say that, I mean, that again, when you say no system is truly empty, that's kind of what the data showed. I mean, dive into this for a second for the listener. Let's talk about the worst case scenario. Like, how bad can it be? What is the worst that you found as far, not major leaguers, because again, getting up for an inning and a third doesn't necessarily mean that you've earned anything. It's great that you're a major leaguer. You've put yourself far beyond, but what's the worst as far as the guys who met that criteria of regular contributor?
The worst was two, and that happened twice. The Brewers had two farm systems. The Brewers had some really rough systems.
They had a good stretch in the mid-aughts and the bad stretch before that.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing their range of what their systems looked like. But yeah, so they only had two future regulars in their farm system at the start of the season. I should say the way we measure this was who's in the system at the start of the season. That way we avoided double counting anyone in the same year for trades or international signings mm-hmm. or guys being drafted. It was who's in the system at the start of the season. The Brewers only had two, but that hasn't happened. The last time that happened was 2000. Since 2000, there's one instance here. The Cardinals had 3 1 year, the Royals had three in another, and that was in 2006. But really, since then,
I think I did that top. If I didn't do that, I did the top 30 for them right after that, and man, it was bleak.
Yeah. So really, since 2000, the worst case scenario is you have three, and even that was pretty rare. That's happened twice, and none since 2006. Realistically, the worst case scenario is you've got four. The realistic worst case scenario, within you know somewhat recent years, is you've got 20 future big leaguers and four future regulars. That's really the worst case scenario. And
when you say regular contributor, really, because you could do that two ways. It could be a guy who starts for a couple of years, or it could be that guy who hangs around in a useful role, but does it for long enough to clear this threshold, right?
Yes. Someone who's, you can say it as a substantial major leaguer, however you want to use the.
But you know, a backup catcher, yeah. A backup catcher who does that for 6 or 7 years would clear the threshold.
You know, it's interesting, actually. I thought that would be the case, but as I looked through, there's a lot of backup catchers who have been in the league for like 10 years, and they're only at like 1,100 ABs. So actually, a lot of backup catchers did not make the cut here. For the most part, these are guys who were full-on starters in the majors or, you know, legitimate starting pitchers. The only real guys who kind of slid in under this threshold where you say, yeah, you know, that's where it's questionable is you had a lot of relievers who amassed, say, let's call it 173 career appearances, and it was spread out over five seasons, and it was mostly low leverage. That's really the floor here of who these guys are. Anyone who's really a full backups, it surprised me, didn't really cross. The only backup catcher types who did were Jeff Mathis, who's, you know, been in the majors for 15 years, and by the way, was actually a majority starter for some of his seasons with the Angels over Mike Napoli. So again, it actually, to clear this bar, you pretty much have to be a starter at some point in your career, or at least, you know, the strong end of a platoon situation for a couple years.
Okay. So that's the worst case scenario. And you know, we have a couple of teams that kind of seem to have some trends. You saw again, the Brewers had a really bad stretch there. The Orioles have, you know, kind of unfortunately for the Orioles fans, they've had some stretches of consistently lack of productiveness, right?
Yes.
On the other end, as you said, Braves, Yankees, those are the teams that kind of seemed to have the most staying power. Is that the fair way to put it?
Those were two of them, but the other team that was consistently across the board by any measure pretty impressive was the Twins. The Twins are third in most future major leaguers in their farm system any given year, behind only Yankees and Braves. They're tied for second in most future regulars in their farm system in any given year, and they've had at least 10 every year during our 15-year sample. And they are also the number one team in terms of most all-stars produced on average throughout our sample. So if you want to understand how the Twins were so good for so long, I mean, 1998 to 2012, they struggled once they got to the playoffs, but they were in the playoffs more often than not. This is how they did it. I came away from this, again, abstractly, you know, hey, the Twins were great. You know, Mauer, Morneau, and even before that, Torrey Hunter, AJ Pierzynski, and all those guys. But seeing it just laid out in front of me, it is truly remarkable the talent the Twins consistently pumped out for 15 years. And, you know, we stopped our sample at 2012. I mean, you look even recently, some of the guys they've added since then, you can see it continuing to go a little bit. So I did think that was interesting that the three teams that produced the most major leaguers on average, Yankees, Braves, and Twins were probably the three most successful teams of the era we sampled, 1998 to 2012. They're right in the mix there with, you know, the Giants, the Red Sox, and some other clubs. So, but that really stood out to me. The Braves were really consistent in their ability to churn out all three as well, but the Twins are the only team to be top three in all three categories.
Now, that is very impressive. And did you see anything that stands out? You talked about, you know, did you see anything that stood out as far as like, okay, this is a theme that runs through either the teams that performed at the top as far as production of regulars and all-stars, or at the same time, did you see any things that stand out for teams that simply, you know, were non-productive compared to the median year after year?
Yeah, so I think what stood out about the most productive farm systems, with one very clear exception, and we'll talk about them in a second, is you really have to amass your talent from all angles. When you look at the teams that produce the most future all-stars, especially, it's guys who were signed internationally and guys who were drafted and guys who were acquired as prospects in trades. You really have to amass talent through all three avenues to be a truly fantastic farm system who really rises to the top of, hey, our farm system produced the most future all-stars of any team. The second thing is, when I looked at the strongest correlation of, okay, what among this results in the most success at the major league level? Because that's what we're talking about here, right? You build a great farm system to build great major league teams. And really, it was the systems that had the most future all-stars, more than future regulars, more than just pure major leaguers. Again, there were strong correlations through all of them. But you go down, I encourage everyone to check out the list of the teams that had the most future all-stars in their farm system in a given year. It's up right now on baseballamerica.com. Every single one of these teams that had 8, 9, 10, 11 all-stars in their farm system, they were in the playoffs and reaching, you know, AL and NLCSs, if not World Series, within, you know, 2, 3, 4 years tops. So I think that was really what kind of stood out to me here was, if you've got the stars in your system, and again, you know it abstractly, but again, just jumped out to me seeing it, you know, right in front of me. Now, the way you can kind of short circuit that, the one exception here is the 2001 Mariners, who obviously did get some big production. Ichiro Suzuki counts toward them because he was prospect eligible when they signed him out of Japan. And that got them a 116-win season that year in 2001 and an ALCS appearance. However, a lot of the best players coming up behind him, they traded a lot of them. And because of that, they have never made the playoffs again when they probably should have made at least once or twice more. So that is another thing, is you can have a great farm system, but if you don't keep it, there's a balance. All these teams you look at traded some guys to go get others. The 2011 Royals are a great example. They kept Salvador Perez, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Greg Holland, Kelvin Herrera. They identified the guys to keep, but they did trade Will Myers, Jeremy Jeffress, Jake Odorizzi. So it's a balance. You have to trade some and keep some, but you don't want to trade most or all of them.
So, Kyle, before I ask this next question, we'll be right back. We have a quick message, and we're back. The funny thing with that is if you are at the top end of this, you're going to have to trade some of them.
Yes.
Because there are only a certain number. There's a finite number of roster spots. And so if you have, okay, if you have two shortstops, one of them maybe can play second base, you know, but like if we're looking, if hopefully we're still both here doing this, but if 10 years from now you're doing a follow-up of this study and you say, you know, that 2019 Padres group produced, you know, an exceptional number of big league regulars. Well, a lot of them are going to be doing it for other teams, but a lot of that, if Gabriel Arias is productive for the for Cleveland, it's one of the things where it's like, well, yes, that made sense. They traded him because there was no room for him to do the same thing in San Diego. And that's also one of the things that does stand out with this is the number of players that teams have in a system that are productive kind of does remind you some of this is a matter of shifting, you know, and trading players at a certain position or whatever, partly because you actually do have a number of future regulars in some cases at one position.
No question. I think when you look through all of these, you'll notice farm systems where guys became future regulars or future all-stars. In almost every case, there's at least one guy, normally a couple, who they became future all-stars with other teams. I look at the 2006 Dodgers, for example. Carlos Santana was in that farm system. He became a future all-star for another team. They traded him for Casey Blake, who helped them get to back-to-back NLCSs in 2008-2009. You know, and in some cases, there are guys who teams themselves just kind of miss on or let get away. You look at the 2002-2003 Angels with nine future all-stars. Well, two of them, Bobby Jenks and Derek Turnbow, they pretty much let go for little to nothing, and they went on and became all-star closers for other organizations. But the Angels were able to make up for that because they had seven other guys they kept, and as a result, they were perennial contenders throughout the 2000s. So every single team is going to have guys in their system who, whether they trade or they let get away, go on to have some success. And that's okay. You can overcome that, if that's the right word, if you have a lot of other really good players who you keep and are productive for you. So, and regarding the Padres, I actually have another piece in this upcoming issue of Baseball America where I looked at this. The Padres have traded 41 prospects or recently graduated major leaguers in the last 16 months since November 2019. And the other team who kind of did that is the Astros. The Astros, I went back and counted for them. They traded 44 prospects or recently graduated major leaguers, and as a result, made four straight ALCSs. They don't make the ALCSs they did and win a World Series and get to another without trading for Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Zach Greinke, Brian McCann. Those guys and many others cost them prospects. And a lot of those guys have gone on to have success. The guys who were traded in those trades or others include Josh Hader, Mike Foltynewicz, who have become all-stars, Ramon Laureano, Teoscar Hernandez, who become solid everyday regulars. And it's awesome. Those guys have had that success. But if you're the Astros, you don't look back on that and say, oh man, we messed that up because you made four straight ALCSs. So, and won a World Series and made another, although there was some illicit help involved. So yeah, I think it just, it's one of those tricky balances where you need to get these guys through all avenues, trades, the draft, international. You need to properly identify who to keep and who to trade. And you will have guys that you need to trade. Every successful farm system has done that. And if you build up to this capacity where you have eight future all-stars in your system, whether you keep them or trade them, if you get to that capacity, you're pretty much going to be a playoff team within the next 2 to 3 years. I think that's the other thing I got to. If you can get to that eight all-star threshold in your system, if you haven't been in the playoffs for a while, that's going to change very soon.
The other thing with that, you said that there was an exception to the, you have to take it from all different avenues. And it's a remarkable exception to me, which is, I don't think you can say that any group did a better job in one aspect of talent procurement and talent development than the Texas Rangers on their international program, you know, at the end of the aughts into the early teens, because here you have a team that ranks among the great, you know, groups that you look at in this entire basically decades of, you know, multiple decades here, and they did it almost all internationally, right?
It is remarkable, the strength of their international program. So the Rangers had 58 future major leaguers in their farm system at the start of 2012. That's the most of any team in our sample. And 20 of those guys went on to become regulars. The only guy who became an impact major leaguer from the draft is Kyle Hendricks, who they ended up trading to the Cubs. And there's a couple of other guys who have settled in as relievers, Alex Claudio, Carl Edwards, et cetera, were draftees. Jared Eichhoff had a couple years as a starter, Robbie Ross and other relievers. So, I mean, there's a couple other draftees who made it, but by and large, this was built almost entirely from their international scouting. It's really impressive. I mean, the names just go on and on. Odubel Herrera, Rougned Odor, Jerickson Profar, Martin Perez, Nomar Mazara, Hanser Alberto, Jose Aclair, Larry Garcia, Jorge Alfaro, Ronald Guzman. I mean, just on and on and on and on. I mean, the Rangers international scouting during that era, you know, the late 2000s building up to that 2012 farm system. I mean, it truly is stunning. Now, the flip side of that is, man, now can you imagine if they had drafted effectively to go on top of that? I mean, we would have been looking at a truly, truly remarkable amount of talent on one team. But even with that, and again, the Rangers had already made the World Series in 2010, 2011. This farm system wasn't really responsible for that. But they stayed competitive into the mid-2000s. Some of those guys were used in trades, for example, the Cole Hamels trade. And I mean, they were a playoff team up through 2016. And by the time you got to the mid-2000s, a lot of these guys, you know, Odor, Mazzara, et cetera, you know, they were part of those playoff teams. So they did get some major league success out of this group. But again, it was something where, on the one hand, it was truly remarkable to see the international talent they pulled. And the other half of it is, man, if they could have complemented that with some better drafting, I mean, we could have been looking at something absolutely insane from a talent pool perspective.
Yeah, it does stand out. Now, at the flip side, if I was going to take one other thing that stands out from this, we talked about Baltimore and how they, you know, had a pretty long stretch of not being one of, you know, being kind of near the bottom as far as productivity. And they did so. It became even more severe in the years after this study ends. But did you notice with them that you didn't, they were draft only almost, I mean, draft and, you know, but their international component, it's the kind of the, to me, one of the stories that kind of tells the story from the flip side, which is if you are very focused on one side draft, but you say, we're not going to be part of the international amateur market. Well, that's going to limit your ability in talent procurement, I would imagine.
It is. And you go back and you look at the Orioles and most of their successes, you know, even from the beginning of the study. And to be clear, they did have some successes. I want to reiterate this. There's a lot of teams here at the bottom of the list who still produce some really good players. You know, back to 98, 99, the Orioles had Jason Worth in their system, Jerry Hairston in their system. You move in, you know, 2000, you get to the Brian Robertses of the world, Nick Markakis is the world. So they had some guys, but they were almost exclusively guys that were out of the draft. Now, again, they did get Jonathan Scope. They did get Eduardo Rodriguez internationally. You know, Wei and Chen was a signee. So there was a little bit of it. It wasn't completely barren. But yeah, I mean, their impact guys, you know, Machado, Dylan Bundy, eventually, you know, bringing in, you know, Zach Davies. He was another draft guy. It's mostly through the draft. I will say, you know, toward the end of our sample, and I did this when I looked back at the teams who were best at drafting in the 2010s, the Orioles actually drafted okay, you know, kind of that 2009, 2010 range. And as a result, they did have the most wins of any American League team from 2012 to 2016. So the cutoff of this does kind of undersell that they actually did have some draft successes. You know, even 2009, look at their farm systems. Again, Matt Wieters is in there. Jake Arrieta is in there. Zach Britton's in there. Justin Turner was in there. He wasn't a draftee, but he was still a guy they had at one point. Chris Tillman's in there. So again, even the worst teams, they had guys, but you're right. It was almost exclusively guys taken out of the draft. There were a couple international signees, but yes, they did in a lot of ways not participate in the international market for many, many years. And that did limit the amount of future regulars and all-star caliber players they would have in their system in any given year.
But well, again, it's, if you go to baseballamerica.com, it's a truly exhaustive, you know, study. I think you're going to have a lot there to enjoy. Kyle, is there anything that I've failed to touch on that you think is important that we talk about from this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit on most of it. I think what I would say is just, I think it's very, very easy to fall into the, you know, prospects are not that great and most of them will break your heart. And most teams, you know, you don't really have that many good ones anyway. And it's easy to fall into. To be honest, me coming from a major league perspective, I definitely had a little more of a, I want to say a dimmer view of prospects as a whole, but a more selective view of prospects, I would say. And in two cases now, both looking at how many future all-stars total are in the minors in a given year and looking at how many future regulars and all-stars are even in just one system on average, it certainly opened my horizons a little bit. If, you know, there are more good prospects than I think sometimes we think there are. And some of these guys take longer. There's a lot of guys in here who got released, had to go somewhere else, and only then did they blossom into an all-star. There's a lot of guys here who didn't look very good up through age 27 and then something clicks at 28, 29. And in our very impatient world, it's almost like, oh, if he's not great by 23, he's a bust, which is ridiculous. So I think that's my main takeaway is just there's more good prospects, more good future major leaguers out there than I think a lot of people think there are. Now, again, I come from a more selective view, so there might be some people out there who thought that there were, every team had 50, you know, major leaguers, and in reality, they need to lower their expectations. So I think it just depends on where expectations were to begin with. But for me personally, I think it's taught me to be a little more open-minded on some guys, as opposed to maybe be a little less selective or pessimistic on the guys who aren't maybe, you know, the top and jump out at you right that minute.
Again, check it out, baseballamerica.com. There's also a lot else there you want to check out right now. We've got pretty much all of our prospect stuff for the 2021 season is up. You can check out org talent rankings, top 30s with scouting reports for all organizations, all 30 organizations updated, relatively recently updated. I think there's been a move or two since we updated them, but updated to almost, you know, the last minute right now. And also everything that you want to know for the college season, we got draft list up. There's a lot to check out, baseballamerica.com. For Kyle, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money.